Good job, Bob.
It is the end of Star Wars month. Marshall and Steven look back morosely. The battles they fought, on the friends they've lost. Now it's a time to take a look back and view holistically the Star Wars universe. Is there some meaning? Is there some secret code? What is Star Wars trying to tell us? How can we take this warning to heart in our everyday lives?
Welcome to Androids and Assets. I'm Marshall.
And I'm Steven.
This week, it's Star Wars Month Part 4, our final...
Oh, thank God.
It's over. Just kind of wrapping up some of our final thoughts on Star Wars. That's kind of the grab bag of what we didn't touch on already, and a bit of forward-looking. In the newest tradition of Star Wars, I wanted to tell you, Marshall, a Star Wars story. I don't remember growing up without Star Wars. It's always been there. We've always had VHS tapes of Star Wars. My older brother had this sleek black case of three original Star Wars VHS. When I, you know, came of age, became a man, I was given the remastered edition of Star Wars 3 VHS, but they were in a nice golden case that had like a nice fitting sleeve on it. Way better than my brother's. I'm sure you remember in these original remastered versions, the first remastering of many, before the movie, there was actually a short documentary about the making of the movie.
So boring.
Not boring at all.
So boring.
People always wanted me to fast forward through it, and I watched every second of this documentary. Why exactly are we remastering this part? Well, there was kind of a wax smudge underneath Luke's land speeder, and I just wanted to take that out and make it look cleaner and sleeker.
This is how we textured the Yuzum in the Jabba's and the Max Rebo band scene.
It was worth it.
Oh my God.
Loved it. It was Star Wars. That was part of Star Wars for me, so I just had to watch all of it. So I've never had a time that I didn't have Star Wars, and it's just been really like foundational, formational for me growing up. Star Wars is just been a thing that I've always been able to tell people, like, yeah, I've seen all the movies. I've always done it. And I'm kind of astounded in some ways that when I meet people who are like, I don't know, I think I've seen somebody today told me that they've seen 4 and 1 and parts of 3. And I didn't even know how they got there. What happened to you? Who hurt you?
I don't think that's all you need, man. But
wait till my super pet comes out. That's all it draws on. 4 and 1 and 3.
4, 1, and 3.
I mean, 5 and 6 are clearly the high watermark of these series, and this poor person just hadn't seen any of it.
But I think we're driving at something that there is, for people like us, there is a strong bond to Star Wars. And I think kind of foundationally, that's what Disney's now trying to monetize.
Yes.
And I don't think we're the first people to have said that. It's very obvious.
Also, very successful.
Yeah. We went and paid our childhood nostalgia tax to Disney. And probably will continue to.
I will do it again.
In the future.
For this movie and many more.
I feel like going through this process has maybe helped break me of it a little bit. Now, if I may, Steven's Star Wars story. For me, Star Wars, I had this fragmentary Star Wars journey that Marshall so reviles in others. I initially saw Star Wars only through a VHS lifted from television that my dad recorded in 1990. It was like NBC had like summer movies and they played all 3 of them in a row. But he had missed all of A New Hope and part of the start of Empire Strikes Back. So all I had was part of Empire and Return of the Jedi. And it's heavily, heavily edited, I will add. It was edited for television, so there was a lot of content missing. So I was just making new Star Wars discoveries for years when the remastered, when I finally got a, probably that same edition your brother had of the VHS and then the remastered edition. But it was so, when I first saw A New Hope, it was in my grade 2 classroom. On like the last day of school, they pulled it out and they played it just to kill some time at the end of the day. And we just got through like the landing of the Titana 4 by the Empire, and the droids are fleeing in the escape pod, and it's like, well, time of the day, turn it off. It's like, no. It was probably another year or two until I actually finally saw A New Hope. And that's how it was. That's how it was growing up in the age of physical media. You were like, well, that was cool, I guess.
If I don't have that media,
I may never see that again. But yeah, years later, I was able to finally see A New Hope. All that to say is Star Wars was very important for me, and I think it continued to grow. Because one of the big things about, I think, like the lack of Star Wars was part of its strength. Just in the sense that you had three movies for decades. You had three movies that painstakingly came out very intermittently and basically had just made just tons of references to things and made very little effort to offer explanation for many of the things in Star Wars. And this created a very fertile field for people to just invent stuff. Anything that shows up in Star Wars for 3 seconds has a goddamn book about it. Like, you can find, like, you know those little bat dudes. What are those little bat dudes? That bat dude who's in the cantina scene, like, you know, he's a Chadra fan, like, you know, and he's a Chadra fan pilot, and there's a comic book about him. Like, it's crazy that, like, everything with such detail is just, like, is laid out. And
even when they ran out of material that was actually already filmed that they could invent backstories for, you know, a known character, they invented new characters. They would say, oh, well, I made this backstory and he encountered this person one time in that plot. So I wrote the backstory of that person that he encountered.
And basically anyone could do this, more or less, in a pre-internet age. This was all done via print media and just sort of like, it was just very open. It was just very open license. And it had just like, it was just a sprawling bramble. And this is why we talk about, like, when we talk about the expanded universe and how it was really important to me. And I think fundamentally it really informed my decision to go in and study history when I grew up, because there's just this rolls and reams of text referencing other texts, and at points they diverge, and at point they come together, and there's different perspectives on things, and sort of like burrowing down into what was going on in the sort of like narrative matrix of Star Wars made me the person who I am today. I feel deeply hurt that Disney was then to say, oh, that's confusing and weird and people don't like it, kill it. And this is maybe my growing disenchantment with Star Wars. The thing I loved about Star Wars the most is gone, or is intensely being, there's an effort to kind of strangle it out. But I mean, of course, Disney will repeat the mistakes of the past as well. It's already starting with all kinds of ridiculous shenanigans, in like the Rebels TV show and some of the stuff they're bringing back. And
Disney had a really good reason though for wanting to kill all of the expanded universe,
because a lot of it was written by crazy people.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, yes, they say, oh, there's too much of it. It's confusing. It contradicts itself. That's fine.
It's misogynist. It's racist.
A lot of it is really bad.
Yeah, Shadows of the Empire is one of the rapiest books I've ever read. It had articles in the newspaper about it and a video game. And this was just a paperback novel that a crazy person wrote about one who has rape fantasy for Leia.
I think, though, that Disney will inevitably, if they don't explicitly use that material, they will draw upon a lot of it. Even though they've said it's not canon, there is so much of it that is canonical. The entire history of the Jedi Order, like episode 1 through 3, built entirely upon this expanded universe idea of a High Council and Coruscant, and it was ridiculous. And so Disney can't just take that back and say, oh, well, we're not doing any of that anymore. A lot of it became baked into canon, and writers would consult these other things that have been written and use parts of them or not use parts of them or take the things they liked. And now it is in real Disney canon, real movie canon. They can't get rid of it. I think they'll end up using a lot of it and just not crediting people fairly true to Disney form.
But I think maybe we should, we've been talking about this for four episodes, so maybe we should do kind of the thing that this podcast is actually about, which is talking about what the hell is the economy in Star Wars? Mm. How does it function? Because I don't think we've talked about this once, despite doing four episodes about it. But I think we should obligatorily do what we're supposed to.
Yeah, I think the first answer there is that the economy doesn't function well, is my guess. It doesn't seem like a well-oiled machine. Throughout Star Wars, we see ancient ships that are just old and falling apart.
It's a rusty universe.
Everything is rusty. Everything is broken. It's a very used world. I would think in a well-oiled machine, you don't get that rust. There's just parts of the economy that don't make a lot of sense and don't... Why do you not get a ship repaired and actually repaired that it functions? Why don't you get a newer model of ship? Apparently they're coming up with new technologies for ships all the time. I mean, granted, usually this just makes the ships bigger and bigger and bigger, but the Death Star 2, better than the old model and three times as big.
You don't want to know about its mileage.
And then you have Star Destroyers, and then you have Super Star Destroyers, and then you have Dreadnoughts, and then you have Snoke's ship. They're all basically the same thing. Same fundamental design, just bigger and bigger and bigger. I think they might have an innovation problem in their economy. They also don't seem to send people to school anywhere. The only university that I ever heard about was the Academy. That was the Sith Academy. Or maybe not the Sith Academy.
The Stormtrooper Academy? There's the Corellian Academy.
The Corellian Academy.
Yeah, that's where Han Solo and went to school. And he learned about spacing. Them.
That's where Luke wanted to go to school.
Yeah, it's where the Imperial Space Navy officers are trained. So if you want to join the Navy, if you want to Yivan et Nioj in Star Wars, you go to the Corellian Academy. But I think based on the fact that, yeah, clearly the Navy is supreme, shipping is supreme, and that is obviously the very foundation of this economy, I think, because based on this often noted thing that everything's really dumb and very planet-centric. Like, this is the planet that makes X. This is the planet that makes Y. And in that sort of system, shipping is the foundation to any wealth. And it becomes the basis for your entire society. And this also maybe explains a little bit how the sort of feudal economy that the Emperor is trying to drag the universe, the galaxy, back into by just having, like, regional governor militants held in line by fear of military reprisals is somehow a functioning model of statehood in his mind, because all he needs to do is really control the space lanes and everything else will flow from that. He doesn't need to bog himself down in it.
It is a nice way to reward other people, though. If all you're looking for is your own power, then yeah, maybe the space lanes is all you need. But if you want to be able to reward loyalty without really giving up your grip on everything, you can say, here's your planet. It's yours. Mind you, if you do anything that I don't like, I can still strangle you, both literally and figuratively. Shipping does play a huge part, both in the movies and just from what we can tell in the economy in general. Han Solo is a smuggler, which is shipping, and that's the only reason that Luke and Ben Kenobi are actually able to get off of Tatooine, is because they come across somebody who does some shipping. They go to Bespin. It's famous for shipping gas.
Yeah, I mean, the Tamana gas mine is the only settlement for literally light years around. I looked this up on Wikipedia. I mean, which is why when the Ugnaught Revolution comes and the Tamana gas mine, you know, human rule is thrown off. There's no one to help the oligarchs of the Tamana gas mine. So
it seems strange, and I don't know that it would go to the extremes, particularly environmentally, that George Lucas saw the Star Wars galaxy. Planets would, I imagine, if they have this fairly smooth shipping, and there's a lot of shipping, smooth transportation of goods, planets would start to specialize. If you have a comparative advantage in something, then you'll tend to specialize in that thing over time, because it's just more profitable for you to make widgets than it is for you to make bolts, because you're just better at making widgets. So instead of trying to make bolts and doing a bad job of it, you'll just make widgets and trade for the bolts. These planets can do the same thing. So you end up with Corellia, that's just known for assembling ships. You've got Tatooine that's known for moisture.
Well, Tatooine's a bad example. It's completely disenfranchised by all discernible metrics, apparently.
Yes. Yeah, but there's planets that the only thing that they have on them is basically the school. They might have a university that people attend, and that's about it. Or you've got Coruscant. The only function that it has is as an imperial capital. It doesn't seem to be productive.
They don't farm there. They in any way. They don't build anything. Yeah, it's just a bureaucracy planet.
Yeah. So this specialization I could see happening. It does happen in advanced economies. There's always people who are fighting against it. We should diversify the economy so that if something goes wrong, then, you know, we won't be caught
unawares
producing something that nobody wants anymore, and then we'll become a backwater. There's arguments for and against it. Diversifying economy does have some benefits, but there's costs. There's an opportunity cost that you're not producing the thing that you're really good at producing, and you could make even more money. Does it have long-term effects? Maybe. And then when you're specialized that way, I think it does set up the Emperor to have a really good, strong hold on the system. He controls the shipping. He's got a huge, huge navy. So he's able to control the space lanes. Everyone, if you're not going to be using the space lanes, you have to try and smuggle through, you know, unknown hyperspace routes. It's going to be slow. It's going to be dangerous. Just not as profitable. If you're going to be on a space lane, though, there's Star Destroyers everywhere. And you do not want to get one of them angry at you. They're fast and they blow you up. And then you have a specialized planet that you can say, oh, yes, you're my Grand Moff. I like you. You get this planet or you get this system. It's yours to control. You get all of the profits off of it so long as I get what I need from it. The rest of it's yours. It's a great reward. Good way to maintain loyalty.
And it's how medieval societies and even today, contemporary kingdoms still function.
It's tried, tested, and true.
And it works in its own way.
Yeah.
It has certainly a cost on the poor and marginal people in those societies. But since when has that stopped anyone from doing anything, I guess?
Almost never.
So yeah, so I think when we like burrow down into the economy of Star Wars, it's actually a very anachronistic model. It doesn't it lacks a lot of the futuristic trappings of the aesthetic.
The only really, I mean, futuristic, modern. I won't call it futuristic, but modern. The only modern thing that the Empire has is a standing army.
And something the Republic didn't have, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
The Republic did not have a standing army. It created a standing army to fight the Clone Wars. So,
and then it turned on them.
And then it became the Empire. So, you know, a lesson for us all, maybe.
Create a standing army. Or a bank.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the bankers were leading the separatists there. Anyway, we don't want to go back into the prequels again. We've done enough of that already. Oh, I'm so tired of Star Wars. All right. So
you know what? You don't have to worry about it for, you know, 8 months.
Oh, good.
So speaking of being tired of Star Wars and excited for the next movie, based on kind of where these past two movies have gone, what I'm expecting in the next movie is a reaffirmation of the Jedi Order. I'm really expecting them to double down on Rey's training. There will definitely be some ghost training. I expect Patrick Swayze to make an appearance, standing behind Rey, helping her with the pottery. I expect her to be trained in a fairly orthodox model of the Jedi Order. She has the books. She just needs someone to, I don't know, tickle her hand with a leaf every now and again, and she'll be trained in no time. It'll be difficult for her because she won't have a small, heavy thing to carry around on her back while she runs through a swamp, but I'm sure she'll make do.
I'm curious what they're going to do about the shortage of kyber crystals that they created with the destruction of Jakku. Is it Jakku? No.
Jedha.
The destruction of Jedha.
Jedha wasn't destroyed. Oh, that was
The whole planet was
Jedha. Jedha was destroyed
by the Death Star, and that's where the kyber crystals came from, and that's what they needed to make lightsabers. So they may have engineered a commodity shortage into their narrative.
The Force is everywhere; it grows. It's always there in between. There's another planet that's growing.
They find another way.
I think definitely With the untimely passing of Carrie Fisher, I think we can expect to see Poe Dameron assume leadership of the Rebellion, which is going to be really interesting because it will be the first time in the Rebellion's history that it's led by a man.
Yay!
Super progressive.
Oh, yeah. So, also, and also their first idiot commander, I think so.
Well, yes. Though Han Solo did hold the rank of general for a while. I had heard before there was some ideas around sort of the first movie was going to be sort of a focus on Han. So episode 7, The Force Awakens, a lot of the focus was on Han as a character, and then he ended up dying. And the second movie was a focus sort of on Luke, and he ended up dying. Episode 9 was rumored to be sort of having a focus on Leia, which they've now can't do. They've promised not to do hologram versions of Leia.
Thank God.
And they haven't filmed the movie yet, so they'll have somehow Leia just won't be a part of this movie. Or there's maybe some scenes they can use somehow that kind of get her out of the film.
They should not have killed Laura Dern's character in The Last Jedi. That was it's a kind of unfortunate mistake, because she was awesome.
So I think they're going to have to find some way to definitely reintroduce, or not reintroduce, I think they're going to have to find a way to introduce another strong female character that isn't just Rey. I mean, Rey is great, but she's sort of the heroic Jedi Force user. You need also that bureaucratic
civilian leader, not just the priest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And without having Leia, there's going to have to be some shifting in the focus. I do not envy anybody who has to write that movie. FN2187 is, I expect, going to try to run away again in the movie.
They have a desertion trope now, so
that's what he's got to do. He might take Rose with him. I don't know. We'll see if she's actually interested in running. Though I could maybe see them doing like undercover work and going to horse planets and saving stable boys for the entire movie.
I would, nothing would make me happier than actually if they got together and they were just, fuck this war, we done. And they just peaced out. But that, again, not going to happen.
No, he will have a turn of heart and become a hero. He really is like the Han Solo character. Doesn't want to be involved in this, doesn't want to be involved in this. All right, I'll be involved and I'm going to kick ass. We'll see how he kicks ass. I think it would be great if he, you know, went in secret and turned other stormtroopers against them, you know, stole their army from them.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing you could do is you just go to a stormtrooper. Hey, you notice how Phasma has that armor that is blaster proof, and they leave you in this plastic shell? Why don't they give that to everybody?
Well, for the same reason that Poe Dameron has an X-wing that's painted in radar reflecting paint, and every other X-wing is not. Some people just deserve more than other people, Stephen.
Right, of course.
Thanks so much for being with us for Star Wars Month. It's been a wild ride. We're going to do it again in 12 months.
Are we? Oh, jeez. All right, see you in 12 months when we talk about Han Solo for a month.
we can delve into Chewbacca.
We'll do something in December.
We can talk about his nephew, Lobaka. Nephew. There is so much to get into.
Talk about the Christmas special.
Oh, the Christmas special.
Life Day.
If you have any comments, please do let us know. You can email steve@androidsandassets.ca with all of your comments and suggestions. If there's any episodes you'd like us to do, maybe a science fiction or a fantasy world that you particularly enjoy, do let us know. We're on Twitter as well, @AssetDroid. We'd love suggestions, and we'd love to get into the things that you love. Thanks for your time.